Welcome to Polycast, the Civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Vian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host.
MMC.
You know what? I'll do the introduction. I think it's been a while since I've done an introduction.
Oh, yeah, just some work around here.
Jeez, man.
I'll let you get away with that comment because you have boobies. Greetings and welcome to episode 172. I'm joined by Imagine.
Okay, rule of thumb. If you're going to write about something online in a PC mag and you're going to write something that everybody else has already written about, make sure you actually read what they wrote first.
Makalua.
Sounds like someone needed a fact-checking committee.
And then some.
Phil.
Greetings.
Guest MMC.
Hello.
And I'm Dan Q. This is your brain on Civ.
Do we get a frying pan and an egg? Because I'm kind of hungry. I got the bacon. Start it with 2K sucking it up and saying, E3, no way. Apparently, 2K has canceled the idea of actually showing up at E3 for this year. Apparently, they're still going to be there to do, like, you know, usual businessy stuff, which is not really surprising, frankly. I rarely see 2K at E3, and even if they do show up, they're off in some corner with some minor stuff, because it is a hardware conference, and only really EA, Activision, and sometimes Blizzard have any real third-party content showing up, mostly because they are the primaries, and the Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo groups usually go, hey look, these guys are making games for our new consoles. 2K is rarely in that list.
Not to mention the fact that 2K had a fairly big showing at PAX, so they've already had their conference for the year.
Well, there was PAX East, and then there's PAX, and then there's the other PAX. So, yeah, I wouldn't doubt that they'd show up to the actual PAX. But, yeah, E3 is getting kind of boring, especially with no Nintendo this year as well.
So. Everybody's working too hard on the new next gen of consoles, so nobody's really got anything.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Sony's already announced the PlayStation 4. I think Microsoft's got the Xbox announcement later this month, whatever it is they're going to be calling it, the 720 or whatever. I'm just calling it the 720 in the absence of, you know, any real information. And besides, E3 is an industry-only event as opposed to, like, PAX, for example, or Gamescom. And if you combine that with the fact that a lot of these companies now are using this thing called social media and live streams, and 2K in particular, to reach their audience, it's a fraction of the cost. They can have their employees just stick around and, you know, wherever they are and reach people from there. So it's going to save them money. They're going to reach more people more likely. It's going to be able to be more timely. It's Take-Two Interactive, the parent company that's got meetings upstairs, and I have a strong feeling they will not be live streamed or archived afterwards for us to watch. So I guess it's not really that big of a shock, as Madden was already saying, but for those of us that remember some E3s of the past where it was like, OMG, new stuff, it makes us all feel old.
Because, well, especially with Microsoft and Sony and them, they do press events like days or weeks before E3 to announce everything.
Well, Nintendo, as you said, isn't going to be there, and they've already had their big release, the Wii U. Sony, they've just had a big announcement. Yes, they'll have more information at E3, but they've had a big announcement. There's no surprises. Yeah. And Microsoft is less than a month away for their big announcement. They're not waiting for E3.
I've never been big on the E3 stuff anyway, because you really can't get an accurate picture of the games there, at least I feel. Like, they don't show you everything, and they don't show you some important things too often.
Like actual gameplay?
Yeah, like that. You can't even use it as a viable parameter of whether or not you want to purchase the title. Like, to me, that would make it more useful, but that's really not what E3 is for, ultimately, I guess.
It's the press event, basically. It's to build up the hype before you actually reveal solid details.
Yep.
Yeah, when those guys have to stand in line for hours and only get to play 15 to 30 minutes, that's really not enough to tell you what's going on.
No.
But apparently it's enough to rate things.
I don't think you actually need to play the games to rate them these days.
Yeah. How much money did you just give me? Okay.
All right.
This is the awesomest game ever. You should all buy it.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks later, after it comes out, oh my god, there are so many things they changed, blah, 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 and they need a patch, blah, 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 blah. We're reviewing our score.
But anywho.
One other thing that, so, well, it's not surprising that 2K won't be at E3 is the fact that the other major studio owned by Take-Two, Rockstar, that never really is at E3, so.
Yeah.
2K is just joining the rest of the family in saying bye-bye.
Yeah, Rockstar's the bad boy of the 2K family, yeah. So they're joining the bad boy. Oh, wow, okay.
Yes, they can't tell us about Grand Theft Auto 5 yet, so no point.
Yep, Rockstar is not going to be there to steal any thunder.
Blonk.
Yeah, speaking about thunder and lightning, though, is there meaning behind Frax's Brave New World cover art?
Oh, dear.
Published by someone who goes by OzzyKP in the Civ community. He was one of the literally dozen guests from Polycast Episode 12 in the first season. First name is Alex, and on Huffington Post and on the CFC thread about this, which Ozzy started, it's already at 4 pages, 61 replies, and more than 3,400 views. He does note that it goes off track, although it's not surprising. One of the game's new features is an expanded ideology system, he writes, so players can choose to follow autocracy, freedom, or paths corresponding with fascism, democracy, and communism. To highlight this feature, the cover of Brave New World is split into three, with a panel highlighting each ideology. Autocracy is on the left, freedom in the middle, and order on the right. Many comments on the Civ5 Facebook page thought the placement was a little odd. Shouldn't communism be on the left and fascism on the right? They have a point, but the answer, I think, might be that Firaxis is having a bit of fun with the cover and making a subtle statement. At the bottom of the box are three logos, the Entertainment Software Rating Board, or ESRB logo, the Firaxis logo, and the logo for the game's publisher, 2K Games. As I looked over the cover art, the placement of these logos stood out to me that the ESRB logo is located in the Autocracy panel, the Firaxis logo is located in the Freedom panel, and the 2K Games logo is located in the Order panel. It seems too convenient to be purely a coincidence. He asked Brave New World developer Ed Beach to confirm whether the placement of the logos was intentional or not, but he hasn't responded to me. He did, however, like his comment on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty much a response right there.
That's kind of an indirect response sort of
thing.
Yeah.
He can be quoted on it, but...
Yeah, I mean, the logos are in the same order that they've always been in. So it's always ESRB on the left and then Firaxis and 2Game on the right. So it's probably more that they had to keep the logos in that order. So they just kind of mixed up the autocracy, freedom, and in order. But yeah, I have no doubt that they were playing around with it just to egg some people on. And I definitely have to agree with ESRB being on the autocracy side. I asked a few people in the games industry about it, and yeah, they were very clear that, yep, that makes sense. ESRB is not exactly a well-liked group.
To that end, Alex says, while the voluntary industry rating system is not government censorship and a happy alternative to it, it is still seen as a barrier to free speech to many among game developers and youth rights advocates alike. And in fact, OzzyKP is the head of a youth rights advocates organization and has been for the past 13 years, so I can see why he would incorporate that into his article. And if you compare it to the Gods and Kings box art, which is the first expansion pack for Civ 5, the logos are in the same order. It just so happens now that we do not have the two logos that used to be completely right aligned. They've now got a left align and a center align and a right align, except if you look at the Gods and Kings box art as well, it is also split up into three panels for all intents and purposes. So there definitely was some creativeness going on. It might have been subconscious. I don't think so. Certainly Ed and other at Firaxis are probably giggling a little bit to themselves with delight that someone was paying this close attention mm-hmm. and thinking about it. But this just goes to show how detail-oriented we are in the Civ community. And in fact, if you had tried something this subtle with, you know, some other game community...
A Call of Duty cover?
Well, I was going to say, like, first-person shooters probably don't have the depth of consideration to notice this. Mm. Yeah, that's a shot. Right across the bow. Yeah, send hate mail. Go for it.
there was a secondary thread where people just actually got upset about the whole reveal because they used the craptastic concept of like this and share it and we'll show you more and released it bits after bits.
Yeah, it was initially shares, and then it changed to likes.
Yeah.
Where they said, we are listening to you, and we are switching to asking for a like to continue the exploration, quote-unquote. It started off at 200, then it was 400, then it was 800, and then suddenly it was 3,000. I'm like, did we fail at math?
Mm.
And then it was finally revealed after 10,000 likes. And, of course, this was just not an excuse for a spam fest.
Yeah.
excuse me.
Spam fest. Which was annoying. But the worst part is that there's, like, nothing new on the box art. Like, there was nothing revealed on the box art that people didn't already know about.
Wasn't it someone saying that because of the statue, they thought that Columbia was in the...
Oh, yeah, that's in the CFC thread. Yeah, they think that the statue is a statue of one of the Colombian guys, Father Comstock.
Semi-related to that, there was a live stream on the 3rd of May, so the day before we recorded this, and it was promoted through Facebook as Community 2K Plays for Access title featuring Haunted Hollow, and it was also tied a little bit into Civ because they gave away a poster for Civ 5. They also gave away the mold of a cold weather barbarian from Civilization Revolution, even though they actually didn't say it was from Civilization Revolution. I watched this, and I actually do own one of those. He is kind of scary. But the event, some people, and this was a separate thread from this, also all kind of coming down through the box art as well, because all that was featured about Civ was box art. There was, quote, a ton to talk about when it comes to Civilization V Brave New World. They didn't specifically say they were going to talk about it on the stream, and we do not know exactly who was responsible for that post. A lot of people have pointed the finger at Kate Dissler, but I'm not necessarily convinced that it was Kate that did this. And some people said that they were misled. Some people said they were lied to. I say, no, you were not lied to, but I can understand if you were feeling a little bit misled. But honestly, some of the visceral that has come out of it is making a mountain out of a molehill.
Yeah.
I mean, it was featuring Haunted Hollow. It was only an hour. There is a ton to talk about Civilization V Brave New World. Although when I was listening to the stream, at one point, Kate says, I know everyone wants more information, and I want to give you more information, but I want to know what you want to know about. So we have a bunch of stuff coming in the next 2 weeks, but get specific. And I actually thought that comment was a little kind of, you are teasing the Civ community. And we can be a bit like a rabid dog at some times. If you tease us too much, we will bite.
Yeah. Well, it's like we're teasing you so that you continue to watch our other show that has nothing to do with what you want to see.
Yes, and that comment about Civ came at about the 54-minute mark of a 63-minute stream. I saw the comments on the Civ Facebook page. One person was like, I got a shitload of homework that I put off to hear a ton about Brave New World, so thanks for that. How about a full exploration and aesthetic social policy trees to make up for this betrayal?
What?
Yeah, you weren't betrayed, you just didn't read between the lines. There is actually a ton to talk about in Brave New World. They just didn't say they were going to do it on that show.
That's right. It's just like there's a lot that we can say about the weather.
Yeah.
Does it mean we're actually going to start talking about the weather now or, honestly, at any point in the future?
Well, I think you just did, so technically.
Not a ton of talk about it.
That's right. It was not a ton of talk about it, and I was just talking about the weather.
Well, since you're talking about weathers, how about we subsume that and go a little wet and exploit.
Oh, man, I love it when things are wet.
Ooh. See, got to let some rain.
There's a lot of talk that can be had about that.
So, Mackie, do you like using subs against the AI? Is it an exploit?
Might be. It's borderline. This is not something that the AI tends to think to defend from, although it makes it great when they have a huge fleet and you sneak up with some submarines. Boom! What fleet?
I don't think it crosses the line into exploit, and the reason I say that is because the multiplayer consideration, okay? If you're dealing with this a human player, unless they are extremely out to lunch or extremely noobish, this will not work.
Yes.
Yeah, that too. So anyways, Iron Crown was wondering, he's playing on King, but this can work on pretty much any difficulty level.
True.
he went, he got subs, he was able to blow up pretty much every unit that the AI was throwing at him because they did not have their own subs, and even when they did get some destroyers out and about, it was only took a couple shots to kill those destroyers. The problem with thinking that it's an exploit is twofold. One, if something sneezes, a submarine dies. and two, there is a real exploit in the game, although it's been seemingly written in as a proper mechanic. If you bring a unit next to a submarine, it doesn't matter what unit it is. As long as it's beside the submarine, you know exactly where the submarine is, and it is seen. So it's only invisible as long as you don't know where it is.
He's keeping the submarine out of range, which is basically how you're supposed to use submarines, how submarines work. They're out of range, and it's best from below.
Yeah.
And also, as soon as you attack with them, they are also revealed.
Well, they're just revealed for their existence, but they don't stay revealed. You just know you got blown up by a submarine.
The AI doesn't know how to play against it. Exploit.
Yeah.
No, how about just fix the AI?
Everything
last turn I saw a submarine over here. Maybe I should do something about that. You know, if it didn't have the goldfish memory, maybe that would help.
Playing the game is an exploit.
Yep.
Being a human and playing the game is an exploit.
That's true. If you exactly mirrored AI behavior, you might not technically be exploiting, maybe.
True. If you think the AI knows what it's doing.
If you exactly mirrored AI behavior, you'd be rather frustrated because you'd find out you can't do half the stuff the AI does.
That's true, too.
And you don't get insane bonuses.
Mm. Well, I think
that's all the difficulty you use.
Yeah. You can use Settler.
Exactly.
Tech-wise, the AI needs to go to subs a little sooner than it does on water maps. It doesn't quite always go there soon enough. And if it did, then it would have subs versus your subs. And it would maybe still lose, but at least it would have them.
Ooh, I'll try my hand at a segue. Speaking of not soon enough, there's a countdown to the Brave New World release.
It's not soon enough.
65 whole more days, guys.
65?
And 11 hours.
Ah, do I have to wait that long to play Brave New World?
Yes, yes you do.
There's a live countdown that someone set up over at timeanddate.com for the North American release of Brave New World on the 9th of July, Ann Arbor time, specifically. And I enjoyed, actually, the thread, because it was linked to on CFC, and it was started by Stonecutter9. He says, warning, avert your eyes, it's not pretty. And the first thing I thought about that was, what, timeanddate.com doesn't have a good layout?
Yeah, pretty.
That's what I thought. And then I thought, oh, he's probably talking about how long it is until Brave New World's got nothing to do with the design of the site. That's where my thought first went. What does that say about me? Only good things, I'm sure.
Sure.
For sure.
Is that till midnight? Does that count as midnight? For a midnight release?
I think it is. But I was going to say, they need to add like 10 hours because of Steam not releasing stuff till Pacific time or something.
Yeah. Well, no. Gods and Kings got released
midnight.
Okay. Yep.
Now, access to... Now, that's an entirely other...
servers were going to slam.
You have access to it right at midnight, but...
The question is if the authentication servers are going to
get... Yeah, working.
...unlock it.
That's usually where things crash.
You may have it downloaded, but it may not get unlocked for a few hours.
Yeah, so it's when the authentication server, you find out that it's still an old Pentium 1 in the corner of the Valve offices, and that's the Steam authentication server, and, oh, it's just tripped over again.
What? Five people want to authenticate at the same time?
No!
Why is that computer in the corner on fire? Oh, that's the authentication server. Did we have to put it out? Nah.
Hey, if that's a countdown to midnight, then I can use that as the same countdown to the first Beyond the Monument.
You're going to stream at midnight, huh?
Sure, maybe. Do Beyond the Monument at midnight.
Hey, imagine, don't mislead the audience.
Yeah, I might not.
Don't make the 2K mistake.
Get all their hopes up and then don't bother.
Get all their hopes up and then the authentication server won't let him play it, so he streams XCOM instead.
Rev 3 for Brave New World. According to the CFC thread, user Menzies, apparently a previously identified city-state is Mbanza, Congo, is militaristic. And then there was this whole side bent about how come it's cyan, why is it colored this way, what shade of cyan is it, what is its significance?
What the hell, guys?
There was a whole rant about if it was the appropriate color given the other militaristic city-states already in the game. It was awesome. And apparently Canada is out as a civilization, and, yeah, okay.
Really?
Are you sure? Where?
According to him, now, if that's true, I can live with that. You know, we're used to being disappointed with the rest of the world. Wait.
we'll disappoint the rest of the world by not being in the game. That's it.
Seek says in the thread, apparently revealed, older antiquity sites provide more culture for landmark improvements.
Earlier in the game, probably.
Yeah, 1,000 years ago.
If you do something on, like, turn 50, as opposed to something that's on turn 100.
If it's the antiquity site for your first barb conflict, i.e. turn 2 or 3, then that's going to get you a hell of a lot more culture than if, it, as they say in the video, than something you did last Tuesday.
Oh, that's super awesome, yes, last Tuesday.
That's what I mean by older.
The most awesomest day in your life.
Well, you really can't classify a recent day as the most awesomest day in your life unless you've got, like, no days left, which is pretty...
The most awesomest day to date, Mr. Lawyer Dan.
Okay, that's better, Mackie. I will accept that amendment and put it into the record. Archaeologists ignore closed borders. I really want to rant about great profits right now, but anyway... Exploration Tree Finisher reveals hidden antiquity sites. Hidden antiquity sites.
The Indiana Jones stuff, according to that video.
Two civs can propose resolutions each voting cycle, and resolutions where top contributors get bonuses give a tiered reward system for first, second, and third place. Well, that kind of makes sense. Details about many resolutions, and we can see who will appreciate or dislike certain proposals. Although I think that's tied to the diplomats they talked about before. They can get us intrigued, but they don't try to steal technologies and make, you know, civs angry at you. This was interesting. Ideologies are, quote-unquote, only good for 3 out of the 4 victory types, which might have been taken a little bit out of context. Eric the Great 12 kind of expanded on that to say autocracy, good at domination, not good at science, culture, and diplomacy. Freedom, good at diplomacy, science, and culture, not good at domination. And then for order, he's got like 7 or 8 question marks.
order, we don't know what to grab.
I don't know. I know. Order, good for time victory.
Woo, thanks for showing up. We're still here. We win. I don't know if they're getting it right or not. The usual line, freedom, as anti-war, therefore it must be good at science, culture, and diplomacy. Autocracy is war. But it doesn't have science, so it must be diplomacy, culture, and domination. And order, yeah, people just keep getting confused. Like, I don't know what it's meant for.
What Les immediately is about autocracy, for example, is says autocracy is war. What about a benign dictator? He just wants to be in charge of his country and no one else in charge. He's not really concerned about war. He's more about oppressing his own people than worrying about the rest of the world. There have been a few of those.
From the Revision 3 video with regards to the diplomatic victory, if a civilization receives enough support from delegates, World Congress, then the leader will obtain a diplomatic victory. The number of delegates needed depends on the number of civilizations and city-states in the game. If no civilization receives enough support to win, the 2 civilizations who receive the most support permanently gain an additional delegate to use in future sessions. So it doesn't have to be a kind of one-shot deal. You can try to springboard yourself to a diplomatic victory.
I think it was an interview or something previously that was talking about it was breaking deadlocks or something. That's what it seems to be doing. It's Civ 4. You could basically keep the game going and going and going by keeping a deadlock on diplomatic votes. There was never enough votes to win. In this, it seems like if the highest votes are getting extra delegates, then eventually they can just outvote everyone and they can force a win. So yeah. It breaks the deadlock in the long run.
Question is, in Civ 5, what is that long run? Because the end game is usually pretty short, so if you have to constantly spin out...
Not if you play on Marathon.
Yes, but then the whole game is, a marathon.
Relatively short.
Multiplayers need not apply.
Why not?
We know from the Revision 3 video, speaking of resolutions to the World Congress, the International Games Project, you will get yourself your tourism increased by 100% for 20 turns and a free social policy. And that's for the person who contributes the most production. If you get it second, you'll get +3 happiness and a one-time increase of 30 influence with city-states. And if you come in third, you just get the +3 happiness. And that's available once any civilization discovers radio.
Ooh, booby prizes.
What about internet radio?
Minus three culture.
Yeah.
No.
Oh. Oh, hate mail.
We're doing a podcast on the internet, and you want to give internet radio negative three culture, and you put this through.
Well, that's what I was referencing, Polycast, so...
Apparently, we are decultured.
Now, Mackie, too much of anything is not a good thing. So, by that argument, having less culture is actually a good thing because you can't have too much anything. Then, by definition, it's too much, Mackie.
Nope.
It's too much culture.
Nope. Culture wins games.
Not too much if you haven't won yet.
Mm-hmm. Not if you disable culture victory, it does not. The World's Fair Project. For first place, you'll get your culture increased by 100% for 20 turns. If you come in second, you'll get a free social policy. And if it's in third place, you get 500 points towards your next golden age. And it seems to be that these tiers are not cumulative. So, yes, I get first place, so I get first place rewards and second and third. Definitely not reading that way, and that's a good thing.
I don't know. Probably is a setup like that.
I hope not.
Well, I'd rather the free social policy than the boost or something.
Well, I agree. So hopefully that there's a way can actually track your progress as compared to other people. So if you're honestly not trying to get first, although it's more powerful in Civ 4 than in Civ 5, I don't want to complete this wonder. Fail gold. Oh, I built it. Crap.
Most of the stat screens that are hidden away in the game, they often show who's got the biggest army, who's got the most land, who's got this. So I don't see why they neglect culture and things like that, and particularly for these projects.
Yeah, well, I figure, I mean, if there's going to be a first, second, and third place prize, they'll probably show some sort of tooltip or something somewhere in the game to show you what's going on. Because, you know, you don't want to have it start and then go, well, I'm still building these units, so I'm going to finish that. And then, oh, yeah, maybe I'll actually start working on that project.
Oh, crap, I just lost,
yeah, and then, you know, waste a couple turns and get nothing out of it because, oh, somebody else has already finished it or, like, has gotten to the point where it's basically going to be finished. So you don't want to waste your time to do it.
I don't think such an omission would be purposeful. It's just when you're introducing all of these new systems and modifying existing systems, the little things like this can sometimes get lost in the
One thing I would say is if these are Congress, considering that the focus is supposedly on diplomacy and working together, particularly for the World Congress, I don't expect these projects to act like regular wonders where you're in a race to see who can get the best. Yes, you're sort of in a race who can contribute the most because you've got the first, second, third place, but you're not in a race to see who can build it first. It's who can contribute to the one building the most.
Yeah, well, if you're going to have a first, second, and third place, it can't be an individual wonder anymore like the rest. Yeah, it definitely can't be, oh, well, this person built the international games, therefore they're the only ones who get it.
Yeah.
Yes, if you're one of the three that tried to build the pyramids and you come in third place, you get a free worker.
Yeah, when JSM's CAG on CFC said that it was a new world wonder, I think it's more accurately a world project.
Yeah.
Probably.
Becky, what's second place for the building the pyramids then?
10% discount on building things. And a free worker.
Ooh.
And a partridge in a pear tree?
Uh-huh.
You get to be buried in the pyramid.
You know, that's a better third place for us.
Egypt Raider has been hoping that the whole cottage system of Civ 4 would return and that trading posts are just meh.
Why don't you just make trading posts better and drop the cottage thing?
Apparently he's noted that in every screenshot, trading posts seems absent. And others have confirmed that in various screenshots, given that this was in April 14th, so a couple of weeks ago, that there was no TPs in the various screenshots we had actually seen, that maybe, possibly, the cottage system would return. And the answer to the question is, why would they bother doing that? Seriously. It doesn't fit with the game mechanics.
It could possibly be the fact that there have been no announcements as to changing the system, so therefore they have no reason to show them off.
Or they just look ugly.
Placeholder art.
All the trade routes are what they're showing off for generating cash. When you're generating cash with trade routes, do you really need the tile improvements? So why build them to get Civ working? And there's nothing new about them, so why show them off?
Yeah, they did say that gold was removed, but no one's really noticed whether or not TPs were removed. Maybe they were. Maybe TPs were just completely removed from the game.
Trading Posts have been on life support since they were nerfed after Vanilla Civ 5 to only, I think, what, base only like one?
One gold.
One instead of two gold additional output. They've been on the decline for some time now. I don't care if they were ugly or gorgeous, to be honest. It was, what's the purpose of constructing them? What's the advantage of constructing them as opposed to constructing something else? Because it's not like, oh, well, we can get trading posts so much earlier than something that's better, so we might as well have something rather than nothing until we can get something better later on. It's just that they went from in Civ 4, you know, when we're talking about cottages, to being... It's quite an extreme.
Well, cottages were overrated in Civ 4, but for a while, trading posts were crazy in Civ 5. Those two gold, you just took puppets and carpeted your puppets and trading posts.
You still do that now. You just have to get to economics first.
Yeah, it's not the same. And then you had that brief period post-patch where if you had the two gold and then you patched the game and then you got to economics, you could get three gold. That was delicious.
And then you finished commerce? Oh, wait, no one actually went commerce.
Actually, some people have said that, oh, this is terrible. If we remove trading posts, then puppeted city-states are just like a sink now. It's awful. It's awful.
Oh, no.
Like, well, maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing.
I don't know. Yeah. You do want the puppet mechanic to be viable in some cases without being like the only viable option for a lot of the game.
Yeah, yeah. There has to be a reason to allow puppets to exist beside annexed cities or self-built cities. Like, all three of those have a purpose, just that there's benefits and drawbacks to each of them. But TP spam all over your puppets, I wouldn't be sad if it went away. But I have a feeling...
I wonder what spam would replace it, then.
Yeah, exactly. Because you wouldn't want farm spam. But I wouldn't be that surprised if TPs were gone. I wouldn't be that surprised if TP stayed, and that it was just that they don't get pitchers. Though trade routes are meant to, I guess, take over all of the primary gold income. So it forces you to be nicer with others if you want money. Although, have we actually gotten a good explanation of how trade routes calculate their money?
So in that video that Ed did for Rev3, he did explain some of what the trade routes did and how it calculates the cash.
Gold output in the city?
Primary is based more on distance and the difference in luxuries. So if you've got luxuries they don't have, you'll get a bonus for the gold. And also the further you've got to travel, you'll get a bonus. The actual gold output of either city doesn't really come into it, as far as I'm aware.
Hmm. Yeah, I would say if gold output of the city does count towards the trade routes, then TPs would be worthwhile to put down. Because in that situation, with gold taken off the map, if you can build, like, London, basically, mass trade post spam all around it, and then basically you get a huge gold return because you had markets and banks and stock exchanges, and then you'd have great trade routes because you'd have a high gold return. And then maybe people would send trade routes to you to get some of that. So that would make sense for trading posts. And even then, maybe the great merchant.
For those of us who are greedy, according to CivCube, which would you prefer for future content?
I like the first response in this thread.
AI MP fixes. Actually, it's also the second response in the thread.
Many, many others.
Yeah. Please just fix the freaking game.
The choices are more DLC civs and scenarios, DLC downloadable content, another expansion, so that would be a third one, neither, onward to Civ 6, or I have no opinion.
Well, if you have no opinion, why did you
vote? Why bother, yeah.
Why did you vote?
They wanted to express their opinion of having no opinion, which is in of itself an opinion by having a lack of one.
Mm-hmm. Like succeeding at failing.
Exactly. Enjoy that.
I have a compulsive addiction to vote. I've got to vote. I've got to vote. But what do I vote for? Click. That'll do.
Leading the way by a significant factor is another expansion with more DLC civs and scenarios and neither onward to Civ 6 neck and neck.
Are they necking?
More or less.
No, they're off by 10. Jeez, dude.
No. 26% is compared to 21% in terms of overall votes. That is close.
Not really.
That's not.
Yes, yeah. Just out of 220 votes, that is close. That is a... It doesn't even have a difference of 10%.
It's close, but not close enough.
There's a clear second and a clear third. And apparently, people want more expansions and more DLC than they want Civ 6.
which actually is surprising.
It is a little, given all the hate mail for Civ 5.
I'm surprised that people haven't been sitting down and saying, this game is so broken, are we ever going to fix it? Or why don't we just start again and make a new one?
When people say we, they really mean somebody else.
Yeah, I have Araxis. Could you get on that?
Yeah.
I'm actually not surprised that Onward Civ 6 is as low as it is. And that's because we had DLCs to start with, and then we've had Gods and Kings, and then we've had Brave New World, and we've had continual patches throughout, and general opinion has slowly been improving overall, sometimes one step forward, two steps back with patches, but particularly after Gods and Kings came out, and now reading about Brave New World, the anticipation is pretty high. I hope it's not too high. I mean, that is always a danger, of course, right, that it's not going to live up to expectations. But I think if you conduct this poll, I don't know, 6 months after Brave New World.
Yeah, I was going to say timing is a huge thing here. It's because we're coming up on an expansion that everybody's all, oh, no, we don't need Civ 6 yet. But like Dan said, 6 months, well, we're just going to be like, where's my new game?
I can see another expansion outvoting Onward to Civ 6. One, we've got an expansion coming up. But after that, it's people saying, why do I have to buy a whole new game and then all this stuff for that? Why can't I just expand my existing game and add to that?
Yeah,
that's cheaper.
Yeah, keep the engine, just keep adding content.
How the hell are DLCs outvoting a new game? Because mentioned right back at the beginning with Vanilla Civ 5 that there would be DLC. People were so raging. Oh, why do we have to pay for a new Civ, just for this? Just why can't we get a full expansion? Now they've had full expansions as well as DLC. But people want more DLC rather than...
Yeah, we had this conversation, I think, on the last episode, that there was also a general thought line that you should always do expansions until all the mechanic stuff is done. And then after that, sure, you get some scenarios and DLCs just to pad out the Civs, but you don't necessarily need more mechanics. But maybe somebody wants specific Civs and scenarios still, but doesn't think that they need more expansion, or they don't need a brand new game.
There might even be some of those who saw some of that was initially introduced as downloadable content, Spain, for example, then suddenly finding itself in the Gods and Kings expansion pack, and then once people played Spain and they really liked it, or really hated it, depending upon whether you were Spain or not, because Spain is always one of those civs that people say, overpowered, underpowered, neither, your mom, you know, those kind of arguments that people get into.
Yeah.
But perhaps people then played, hey, Spain, so this is interesting. I didn't get it as downloadable content, but it came out with Gods and Kings. Maybe I should look at it, some of the other downloadable content that came out before it.
Yeah. And there's also the, if you want another expansion, you'll get that in a year, maybe year and a half, or two, depending. If you want another game, you'll get that in about 5-6 years. So there's also the thought line of, more expansion means I get to play stuff sooner. So in a year to 18 months, I get new content so I can keep playing this game that I like with new stuff. Versus, I'll see you in about 5 years.
And then another 5 years for it to be patched properly and have the mechanics put back in with new expansions. Yeah.
Recorded for episode 164 with Dan Q, Makalua, Demian Team, Mad Jin, and Silent Knight 13.
Life, a glorious life. We have brought them back to life.
Hey.
It before it spreads. Zwyzor, or Zwyzor, maybe. Zwyzor. Let's talk about the recalling to life mechanic. He has an idea that, and Phil has to close his ears at some point. At some point, yes, he has to close his ears.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, so apparently reviving a conquered civ, you know, one that's been completely wiped out, is more of a fancy thing you do because you're bored than a good thing to mess with your rivals. So basically, bringing a civ back to life is there just for fun, as far as he's concerned. And other than a diplomacy victory, because they will vote for you, in general, they're kind of a waste of time to do that. Though, you can always hand them cities, you can always hand them units, and if you really want that recalled to life civ to be of value, you can just bump them up, and then they will be of value. So the problem is what he had a problem with, of course, and where his suggestion comes in. He'd like to suggest either giving the recaller an option to boost the recalled, as in the one that got brought back, with known technologies, or automatically push freshly independent at similar level of technology to other civilizations. Self-balanced by lack of economy, take some time for new civ to catch up with the rest of the world, depends on difficulty level, or at least give them a temporary boost to military production, which never made sense to me. If we walked in and gave Lithuania back its independence, would they be able to produce new units? No, you'd have to build that. Stuff like that. Anyways, this suggestion is backed by written history. It does know many cases of countries gaining independence after many years, up from decades to millennia, but not a single case of sending mass-produced spikemen against tanks in the modern era. So basically his idea is give the liberated civ techs, and later on in the thread it says, we should do tech trading because that would solve this problem.
I know, yeah, the tech trading, that was a Hallie Hal Cyan, too, that said that. That wasn't the
OP. It wasn't the OP. But basically, my answer is no, it's not a good idea. One possible suggestion here is that if a civ has been conquered by another civ completely, and it has been conquered fully for a period of time, then when you recall that civ back to life, they should be at tech parity with the civ that conquered them. Not the one that recalled them to life, as in, if I walk over with a bunch of pikes and stab a, you know, a GDR on the head, they shouldn't get pikes, they should get GDRs. Basically. So if they've been conquered for a period of time, that's the tech that I would suggest would be the one that they should pick up.
I don't know. It's not plausible.
It's still a bad idea, but...
Well, at least the person doing the liberation, giving them technology, makes some degree of sense compared to the person that conquered them in the first place. The civ that conquered them wasn't going to give them anything. They wanted them out of there.
Except that they're incorporating them into their empire. And then everywhere in the empire, if they're incorporated, as in, you know, it's been there for a while, would have access to the technology. You're not going to build a university in a conquered city unless you share the technology about building a university.
I guess.
That would make sense. It'd be kind of like the states wandering in and, I don't know, liberating some backwater country that's been conquered for a while. They don't automatically get access to the U.S.'s technology.
I don't think the U.S. gave them the technology, though. That's why.
And that's the thing. They wouldn't give them the technology. But they do have the technology of the people who conquered them long ago, because they've been living there. And
all right, that's fine. I don't think this will impact the majority of games regardless.
Yeah, no. Some people have already said, you know, just hand them new cities if you want them to get better.
Yeah, where would you do that? Especially if the map's already pretty crowded. Someone's getting wiped out fairly late and then brought back fairly late. And or...
Well, if you're a conqueror and you're liberating somebody, you can always hand them cities that you're conquering to offset your unhappiness problem.
That's true.
Which is what some people do. It's a nice storage location for cities, because you can always turn around and just kill the civ anyways if you want the cities back. It's not like they were a problem in the first place.
You're a little unpopular, but you could do it.
Oh, well, you're going to be unpopular anyway.
That's true.
But the point is, I think it's all about being able to do a diplomatic thing. The extra vote for the UN, somebody else to help you, or a buffer. Or, you know, if you do hand a number of cities to the AI that's been recalled, you can sign research agreements with them. Because eventually they'll have a big enough empire to sign that. And you'll never have to worry about them again. The idea of transferring techs to a liberated civ, I can see you bringing up non-military techs. All the simple stuff that's just improvement-wise. I can see some of that, but it wouldn't be tech trading or from the person doing the liberating giving the techs.
I don't like the idea of feeding techs in Civ games anyway.
Yeah.
Like, the investment you do to tech is so large. In fact, I don't like research agreements, but I think they're better than tech trades because they're less overpowered compared to other aspects of researching, just pure research. But when you have some mechanic where you can take all this hard work and instantly transfer it over to another civ, the potential for abuse or for getting completely and utterly screwed is just enormous. And it really does break the game to some extent. Like, the importance of strategy versus, oh, I got this guy to hand me a bunch of texts, or, oh, I handed this guy a bunch of texts, and now he wins for me. No, I don't like that setup. Remove something from the game that's otherwise there, which is the importance of your turn-to-turn choices.
I don't know, maybe for a short period of time, the revived Civ could have a, if they had enough and they were, you know, they were able to get it, you know, like a discounted research agreement, either in terms of gold cost or how much in terms of the science output that they would be able to get, assuming they got to the end of the research agreement. I could see that possibly, not from now until the end of the game, once they're liberated, of course, but just in the short term, as opposed to, yeah, outright gifting tax.
Screw it, just give them a 50-turn golden age.
Yeah.
All settled and done.
Done. I guess if that gets brought back, tends not to have a great city. So Golden Age, when you're making zero or less, isn't really going to help you much.
Yeah, 50 turn Golden Age, troll all. It's good.
0% of zero is.
Everything is settled.
I mean, some people are complaining, and it's like, oh, well, whenever possible, you know, when you liberate a civ, the wolves are going to come try and kill them. Well, okay, if you're going to take the effort to liberate a civ, you've taken personal responsibility for that civ's existence. For at least the period of time it takes to get them up and running. So don't complain if they get wiped out because you said he wandered over going, we liberated you. See ya.
You can liberate them again. It's all good.
Do you get extra bonuses for liberating them twice?
They'll vote for you twice as hard.
We love you twice as much.
I don't think it would matter a whole lot, though, because liberated civs along this line, they're really not competitive forces in the game ever again unless the human player goes out of his way to give them stuff that they are.
I'd worry about higher difficulty levels because the AI gets pretty massive bonuses going there. So
yeah, but again, like, okay, is some super AI going to liberate a civ in the first place? And if it does, will the liberated civ be any significance at all?
Yeah, it depends on what they had. I mean, if they were a culture civ, and they're now at one city, but it happens to have all the right stuff, and they had their all the right social policies, maybe.
That would be pretty fluky, but I guess I could see that being a problem.
Or maybe they had great relations with everybody else, and everybody else votes for them.
Somehow I doubt that would happen, especially because their ability to have any significant presence with the city-states is going to be diminished, considering they don't exist and don't have any gold for a period.
And if all the city-states got wiped out?
Well, then who's voting for them?
Other civs.
Why?
Because they're not you.
Yeah.
I just didn't do that.
It's one of the G&K things. You can't vote for yourself anymore, so they always vote for the one they like the most, or the least, less bad.
I guess. I mean, we're getting to some pretty unlikely scenarios here.
Yeah, but, you know, you have to. It's better than tech trade.
Yes. Yes, I will admit that.
Recorded for episode 166 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Majin, and Blauerfackel. Channeling the inner 4-year-old in all of us by asking why.
Why? Why? Why are the workers left-handed, guys? Guys?
That is really up the post.
Yeah, that is literally it.
GMO, genetically modified organism? What? Why are we posting? We just don't post.
Left-handers unite.
Why are all the workers left-handed when they use their hammers in their mouths? They always use their left hand. Somebody goes into, it's left-handed privilege, man.
Maybe they're just trying to get better with their offhand.
Minority rights.
Sorry.
They're trying to become ambidextrous.
Yes.
All right, so I ask on the panel here. Panel is left-handed.
Well,
God rules.
I actually can write with my left. No. It's only slightly worse than my right.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with Phil. I distinctly remember in first grade or so getting the pen taken from my left hand and put in my right because apparently it was the wrong thing to write with your left hand.
Yeah, I distinctly remember that as well, except I told the teacher to go screw herself and kept writing with my left hand. I'm left-handed. You don't
I'm
like
actually
it.
Right-handed for sure, yeah. But I'm pretty good with my left, too.
Well, I find that fascinating that not just one but two people on the panel have had an experience of a teacher essentially saying that you should be writing with your right hand.
It's old school, man.
Yeah, my mom had that happen to her, too.
Mm-hmm. One of my great-grandfathers, he was left-handed, and he got the strap. And I remember my great-grandmother freaking out when I was a baby because she'd hand me something and put it in my left hand, and my mother had to explain, like, they don't do that anymore. And from this thread, there was the happy, like, Valak saying this made my day, and Drunken Ryan was kind of angry about it, or at least he posted as angry. I really don't know if this is serious or not. They want to say, you left-hander is better, build that road and that mine over there because you serve nothing else, just the dirty work. And it's like,
okay, then.
The more bizarre, though, was like, Sami Khalifa says they're actually right-handed and we're looking at them in a mirror. Sif holds a mirror to real life.
To whose real life?
Or Eagles Pursuits, all the right-handers unionized.
Similar to that, Dogmo said, they're not. They're all right-handed. They just use their left hand in protest of unsafe labor conditions. You're really going to force me to work when I can see that barb 5 tiles away? Fine, but I won't use my dominant hand.
That's why it takes so long.
Honestly, I saw this thread and I just thought, troll, yeah. troll. But I enjoyed it. And the people, like some of the negativity, I'm like, maybe there's something subconscious in there about why they're all left-handed. But it honestly could have just been, oh, we need to have them animate. And some person used their left hand and then it was just copy-paste.
That's it. We are not putting right-handers in the game. You are not worthy to play Civ.
It would be kind of cool, though, if they designed a left-handed and a right-handed guy, and what's the instance of left-handedness? One out of every 9 people?
30.
So one out of every 9 workers.
We're at least 30% and growing. Left-handers is a sign of evolution.
Canis Alvinus says, it might just be that they write with the right hand and work with the left hand.
Oh, that's true. They might be doing something else with that right hand. That's certainly true.
Wait, no. That's
like drinking water.
Beards. What is it with all the beards? That's actually the theme of Gods and Kings. Beards. We need more beards.
Didn't you know? Beards are a thing.
Yes.
On your face.
Not mustaches, not soul patches, no, not sideburns, beards.
Full-on beards. Well, what do you call Shijong's beard? That's not exactly a beard, but no. Hyperion Everon and Sifanatics started a Just for Fun poll, Mr. Beard Civilization 5. So of all these new leaders in the Brave New World, 3 leaders plus Shaka, their mighty facial hair has gained adoration from all the community, but can they compete with the existing bearded leaders? Dan will be happy. There's a poll.
I am, but there's a fundamental flaw in the poll, unfortunately, that detracts from this. And I can either point it out or maybe Phil, because in the past, well, Phil and I have pounced on people's ability to conduct polls properly.
There's no banana option?
No, the problem is, in the instructions, it says pick 3, and it's a multiple-choice poll, and there's no way to actually limit it to just 3. Like, there are 207 people who have voted in this poll, yet there's 517. If you add up all the votes for all the leaders, it's 517, and that does not divide evenly into 3. And even if it did, that would just be coincidental.
But if it's 200 voters, 3 votes each, then that would be 600. So some people only voted once.
That's correct.
There hasn't necessarily been everyone voting 4 times.
And it does say most epic beards, so it's okay to check more than one. It's plural. It's not singular. I suppose if you wanted to check them all as epic, I think your definition of epic is a little fail for you personally. But if you just remove this pick 3 part, then I would have no issue with it at all.
Yeah, no.
Well, my issue with the poll is it's rather sexist. I want to vote for Mackie.
I don't have a beard, and I'm not a Civ 5 leader, so therefore I'm disqualified. I guess instead of the banana option, you can have the Mackie option.
I don't think Mackie feels slighted by this at all, to be honest. Although I will say another positive in favor for Hyperion is his use of alliteration.
Yes, all the leaders.
Grumpy Genghis. Would he be skewered or beheaded if you called Genghis grumpy to his face?
Hmm. But apparently the glorious Gustavus is winning.
Yeah, it's something. I think the best comment was something about his forked beard. That's what is winning it for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Stuart, what was that comment? Is this just like a 2K thing? There are lots of things we could talk about Brave New World, but and then, you know, not talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You said that the best comment was someone's comment about the beard, but what was the comment specifically about the beard?
I'm trying to find it. It's about
a very
about...
long beard, too.
Yeah, we're going to comment about your comments without actually commenting. Well, he's still trying to find it. Second place is currently a tie between Awesome Ashurbanipal and Neat Nebuchadnezzar.
Well, they've both got old school Wonders of the World type of beards.
Yes, it's there are the old wonders. They are the wonders of the world. You may not shave the beard. It is now a UNESCO heritage site.
Well, they don't do beards like that anymore, now do they?
Yes, because a bunch of bearded people kept doing crazy stuff, and now people are weirded out by people with beards, like Santa Claus. Yeah, unfortunately, Santa Claus is trailing in fourth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, professional Pedro.
Yeah. Spectacular Suleiman at
51. Yeah.
And Harsh Harold is at 45, which is more than Darius.
Angry Attila is last with 6 votes.
Yes.
Wonder what he's angry about.
Concrete Genghis is only at 7, so it's really...
Yeah, Attila's probably mad because he's in last.
That's why they're angry and grumpy.
He got the crappy beard.
Yeah, it was Uberfrog who said it's all about Gustavus' fabulous forking beard.
Don't try to say that 3 times fast.
Fabulous forking beard. Fabulous forking beard. Fabulous forking beard.
See, I was hoping someone would just say that. Because, you know, as soon as you tell someone not to do something, they turn around and do it.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
There's many reasons why people would vote for stuff.
Some people just like clicking.
Yes.
Ooh, a button, click.
Maybe that's how Polycast was nominated for Best Produced Podcast last year, because people just click and... Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, wait, that's not the delete podcast button. That's the vote button.
Why did we vote for this?
Oh. You know why it's been 2.5 years since Stuart's been invited on this show.
Speaking of which, want to walk us out of this?
Sorry, lead us in a charge out if you'd prefer.
Be a tactical retreat.
Oh, what do we do? What were we talking about?
Sif.
This is about...
I don't think a tactical retreat is possible anymore.
Okay, this has been Polycast episode 172. Repeat after me.
Say repeat after me, Stuart.
Repeat after me, Stuart.
Oh, get up yourself. This has been Polycast episode 172, and we've been talking about 2K games.
No one cares about that part.
We don't have to go over the topics.
Yes, we don't summarize the topics anymore, Stuart, but that...
Thanks for the old school reminder.
I don't know. It's been 2 years.
What I find enjoyable is, remember, is what we don't do anymore, but we still do, you forgot.
Who's here? I don't remember. No. Well, we've got McAllure. Do we do that?
Yes.
Apparently that's her closing statement.
Yeah. Brain freeze.
Imagine.
Yeah, that's it. I'm out.
For me and team.
Been fun, son. I'll use the wet tactics of the submarines.
Thank you.
You're left in the center, right?
Okay. And me, Stuart MMC Rush.
Well, I mean, of course all the workers in Civ are left-handed. Only left-handed people do any real work. Ha-ha! I'm left-handed. You can also send hate mail.
Well, same here, so, you know.
I can dual-wield.
Oh, are we going to have great archaeologists and one of them going to be Indiana Jones? Because I'm pretty sure he ignores his closed borders.
Wait, is he ignoring your closed border?
Two sieves. Talk over top of Imagine right now. Two sieves.
I imagine what happens in the movie. Thanks for asking. So, you know, tell us how you really feel.
Imagine, can you spell that for us, please? For the record?
Yeah, how many B's are there in the middle? Because it starts with a P and it's the T and there's a B, 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 you know.
Record date May 4th, 2013. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take Two Interactive. Copyrighted Civilized Communication at civcom.net.